Hey, you.
Konnichiwa, you Sega-sational Sega fans. Dan here, but you can call me the Mega Driver. I'm one half of the Sega guys. And the other half, and bear with me for this one, this will make a lot more sense further down the line of the episode. He's the Genghis Khan to my Rasputin. Here with me is James. How you doing, mate?
Usually I think you come back with an impression or something, but I'm not really up to speed in my Genghis Khan, mate. I need to work on that one.
I thought it might catch you out. It's probably a lot of people scratching their heads thinking, what the hell am I on about? But believe me, I was thinking that when I was playing a few of the games we're going to be talking about today.
No, absolutely, mate. Some absolute belters that we're going to talk about today. Plus, as we're back on the content train again, getting these all in the bag to give us a nice kind of gravy train of regular content for the good folks at Radio Sega and for our budding listener base. So, all good here, mate. How's yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Finished a couple of games off last night. I was pretty happy with. Played through Doom Eternal, which I loved, even though it's more Mirror's Edge than Doom. Doom guy never jumped, did he? Not in Doom 1 and 2. But he loves you know, running around. He loves jumping. Double jumping, swinging about on bars like the trapeze in the new one. But that aside, you know, the kills are good. And finished one of the games that we're going to be talking about today. How about yourself, mate? What have you been up to?
Well, just tonight before we started recording, as people who follow us on Twitter will see, I decided to try and finish Virtua Cop on the Saturn with just a controller because the quest for a smaller CRT goes on, so I can obviously use the Virtua Gun or the Stunner for our American friends to play it kind of properly. But 6 credits it took me to finish it with a controller. Obviously got to the end and took Fang and his helicopter down. That's it. So all good. I think the Virtua Cop loving we're seeing online just now, especially after, you know, Pandemonium's brilliant documentary. There's a lot of people kind of trying it out or going back to it. So that's what I did just before we came on. Had a wee shot of Fighters Megamix as well, unlocked a couple of hidden characters on there as well. Akira Kids was the last one that I unlocked, finishing the Virtua Fighter path on there. Had great fun with that. Really, really good, you know, fighting game. We spoke about that on a previous episode as well. Fighters Megamix, how it should go on a Saturn Mini, a stalwart, and just a great, great Saturn title that I think anybody should play.
Yeah, it's an absolute classic. I played a little bit of it because obviously we were as always WhatsApping each other before we came on. So I played a bit of it. You got me hooked on it. I had to move some saves, but I did the unthinkable, mate. I took my 4 megabyte RAM card out and put my memory card in to back up some of my saves, thinking that my new solution of kind of wedging the memory card forward in there would work. And several attempts later, trying to play another game that we're going to be talking about today, my 4 megabyte card has decided not to work again. But after a lot of jiggling, a lot of poking, a lot of cleaning, and another fresh piece of cardboard to wedge in between, it is now operational again.
I think the general consensus is whenever you get the 4 megabyte RAM cartridge working on your Saturn, is just do not touch it. Just leave it. I think the amount of deoxit that I applied to that slot after, you know, obviously Argan, who, you know, Simon that worked obviously on your machine as well, gave me a bit of advice obviously on my kind of port, my cartridge slot, because it had given up the ghost, and a lot of that I think was down to the fact that it was up in Munkle's loft for the best part of 25 years, and we'd obviously, people have seen the condition it was in whenever I got it back off, and it was kind of coated in that white kind of undercoat spray, and I had to, you know, really clean it up. So I think maybe some of that's got in there, obviously kind of oxidization on the pins has obviously led to it kind of losing a bit of connection. So several applications of deoxit has worked, but my cartridge doesn't work fully inserted, so I have to put it in and then lift it up a couple of mil, and it works every time, but I ain't touching it. I'm afraid to clean my Saturn in case I nudge it and it doesn't work.
No, I know. I had, like, putting my hands behind to take the wires out if I need to move it anywhere is a lottery if I nudge that car. I've got the action replay in my Fenris Saturn, in my Japanese one, and then in my modded Saturn, I've got the 4 megabyte car, and I'm terrified of touching either of them.
it's bizarre though that, I mean, we've spoken about this kind of some length as well. It's kind of bizarre that for a company who made cartridge based systems that it's such an Achilles heel on the Saturn, and it's all down to, this is the way it was explained to me by Simon, is that it doesn't use friction the way like the Mega Drive and Master System does. The pitch on the pins, it's far shallower, so it's not getting that constant friction of rubbing the connectors on the cartridge against the pins to kind of keep it, you know, fresh, so to speak. And because, again, it's not something that's used often, because we didn't get the 4 megabyte cart over here. We only got action replays and the official save cartridge. So unlike Mega Drive and Master System cartridge slots, Game Gear cartridge slots, things like that, there wasn't a constant in and out, you know. So they just oxidize, and it's very, very common. So if your cartridge slot isn't working, highly recommend, before you open it up and do anything daft and bend pins, go online and get yourself a tube of deoxit and basically put it on your cartridge, put a couple of drops on, get a wee cotton bud. We've got a bit of tech helpline going on here in the Sega Guys podcast. if you get your deoxit, a couple of drops either side of the cartridge, actual, you know, pins themselves, smear it across with a cotton bud, put it into your cartridge slot, let it sit there, take it out, wipe it off, reapply, do that maybe 5 or 6 times, just to get it right in there and just let it kind of eat away at that oxidization. Because it will, if you've not used it a lot, if it was a system you've picked up secondhand, it's probably not been used a lot. And you'll probably find that eventually, as the deoxit eats away at that oxidization and puts a nice clean conductive coating on there, that your cartridge slot will probably start working again. So that's your Segaholic 101 tip for hardware on this week's show. There we go, Hardware Corner.
Well, let's be honest, mate. I think, given what we're talking about today, a working cart slot is a must, whether you're rocking the 4 megabyte RAM cart to play those special games that need it, or if you just need to, you know, you don't want to mod your console and you want to use the action replay cart to play imports. You know, both, it's essential stuff. Because if you want to tell our listeners on Radio Sega what we're talking about today.
Today, we are talking about must-play Japanese Saturn imports. Titles that stayed in Japan, didn't come to the West. And obviously, some of these are very expensive. Again, you know that we use ODEs to kind of experience a lot of these titles, as well as they're ramping up in price. But these are games that we feel out with the kind of obvious. So you're not going to hear the kind of the usual, you know, like X-Men versus Street Fighter or Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter as much as they're fantastic games. We have picked a handful of titles that range from the obscure to the bizarre to the absolutely fantastic. So again, Dan and I have chosen several games each, and we're just going to talk through them, why we like them, and we're going to give you some eye-watering prices if you wish to obtain a physical copy in 2022.
I think when it comes to the eye-watering prices, mate, I think you've got me beat on a few of these.
Yeah, it wasn't until after I put my list together and we were talking about it and we were on eBay. Oh, Jesus. Oh, wow. It was like, how much?
Yeah, I think for most of mine, I went for games that I got on disc for the majority. A couple that I had, I think there's just one that I had to play on the Fenrir. But for me, I own a couple, so they're not, obviously, if I could get them, they're not as eye-wateringly expensive as some of the other ones. But I've got one on here, and the one that I do not own is, it's one that I'm never going to own unless I literally have money to burn. So, should we step through these then, mate? Do you want to give your first pick for your game that's big in Japan?
Yes. So my first game is Hudson Soft's Bulk Slash, released on the 11th of July 1997, and a little bit about the game. So it is a third-person action mech simulation reminiscent of Virtual On. The players assume the role of an SDF fighter pilot, Crest Dolly, taking control of a transforming flying mech through seven stages, each with a boss at the end that must be fought before progressing any further in an effort to overthrow the army of Military Chief Alois Gardona of the planet Blau. There we go. That's the official. Basically, long story short, kind of isometric 3D, kind of shoot 'em up mission based. Really, really good looking game. Kind of the best way to describe the actual character you control. It's a bit like a seeker jet from Transformers. Think if it's a blue machine that you control, so it looks a bit like Thundercracker. So there's like kind of different targets you've got to take down. Some of them are on the ground and can be reached in mech mode, but some of them you have to take to the sky, take out some kind of drones and enemy fighter jets as well that try to take you down, and then kind of you're using the bumpers left and right to spin the camera around and try and come at your targets on the top of buildings from a higher vantage point. Really good fun, and the best thing about it now is that it has had an English patch through the fan community. So now whenever you go into those menus and missions, you've got a far greater idea of what's actually going on and what's required of you. So that's my first choice. It goes for between £175 to £310 when we looked at it, if you're wanting an actual disc-based copy. But again, that's a native Japanese version. You would not have any fan mod to help you with the missions and things like that on there. But even without that, you can kind of, it's just based on the fact that it is a kind of shoot 'em up, with those kind of flight mechanics and the other transformation mechanics as well. You can kind of bundle your way through it and have a bit of fun with it anyway. So, yeah, that's my first one, is Bulk Slash.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning looking. I think it's one of the best game looking games of that generation. I mean, pretty sure it runs at 60 frames per second, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's buttery smooth, mate. It's superb.
It's outrageous because it's huge 3D environments, the use of VDP2, again, the unsung hero of the Sega Saturn. The infinite planes look astonishing. There's a little bit of draw distance, but you're in huge cities with massive towering tower blocks. Some of the bosses in there are absolutely enormous. It's so visually impressive. It's maddening that it never actually came to the West at all. But such a shame. It's one of those ones, I actually have the disc. I got the disc in a bundle of, quote, Sega junk.
That's right, I remember that, yeah.
I think there was about 50, Saturn games in there. I got from a Japanese auction site. Most of them worked, and I saw a loose disc when I was buying, and I thought, what the hell is that? But, yeah, whatever, it comes with it. When I finally got it, realised it was Bulk Slash, and that's probably the luckiest pickup I've ever had in my life. It's just a disc mine, so I don't have anything like a nice little jewel case to put it in. It's fantastic, though. I absolutely love playing it. But, mate, I think it's one of these ones, given the price. I mean, I can't see anyone being as lucky as I was. I thank my stars that I got what I did. It goes for a stupid price on eBay, like many of these do. But I think you've really got to go with the translated version. Not only do you have it translated, but you have little quality of life adjustments in there, and especially the ability to use the Virtual On stick, which I'm actually eager to try out, but I haven't had a chance yet.
Yeah, that's right. They've added the dual stick, the kind of Virtual On twin stick support on there as well. So, again, just kind of harking back to that kind of fan mod stuff that we talked about in a previous episode, the work that these guys are doing. They're not just adding another language to these games, but they're adding features as well. And it would work really well. I think that, again, as I said in the wee kind of spiel at the start there, it is very reminiscent of Virtual On, kind of control-wise. Very kind of similar layout, similar camera angle, the way the kind of third person just behind the mech kind of slightly raised at an angle to give a good kind of view of the kind of playing field out there as well. So, aye, it's absolutely a must play. If you've never played Bulk Slash before, and you've got access to like an ODE or something like that, 100%, you know, look it up and get that kind of fan mod version on there and enjoy it. Or if you've got big deep pockets and don't care and money's no object, just go on eBay and pick it up and you don't care about any mods. You want to play it vanilla Japanese, then obviously it is obtainable for the right price.
Absolutely. It's it's absolutely 100% a must have big in Japan special one. Great choice, mate. Absolutely fantastic choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about yourself?
So I'm going with, and I think listeners, you'll have to bear with us, some of the pronunciation on here for the anyone who speaks Japanese or understands Japanese, we're probably going to butcher the language here. and it's why I'm got the misfortune of going first, but I don't worry, I think James has got the hardest one. But anyway, my first big in Japan game is Goiken Moyo, Anarchy in the Nippon. This is a one-on-one 3D fighting game. And now when you think of 3D fighting games on Sega Saturn, you think Fighting Vipers, Virtua Fighter 2, Fighters Mega Mix, Last Bronx, etc. You think of terrible versions of Toshinden. there's not too much else 3D fighter-wise that comes close until you see this game. This is a game released in 1997, and it was made by ex-AM2 developers. It was actually... part of the team that ported Virtua Fighter 2 to the Saturn back in 95. They enjoyed it so much that they wanted to make another fighting game. I think they were told no by Yu Suzuki. It's a lot like the teams back then. When you hear things again referencing this Virtua Cop documentary from Pandemonium on here, devs were kind of just shifted on to the next projects. But because they wanted to stick with fighting games, they said, right, well, we're going to go out and we're going to create our own one. First of all, it looks absolutely stunning. You know, that knowledge, obviously they're familiar with the SGL, Sega Graphics Library. It runs in the Saturn's high res mode, so it looks astonishing. It looks absolutely fantastic. It's kind of funny. These aren't martial artists. These aren't, you know, you haven't got your pancratum or whatever like Jeffrey. You haven't got anyone using the martial art that Akira uses, which I cannot remember the name of right now and is extremely hard to pronounce. Or you haven't got anyone doing Jeet Kune Do like Jackie Bryant. But they're basically just ordinary people. You've got like shopkeepers and chefs in this game. And I think there's hidden characters if you scroll off. You know, think of your Tekkens where you unlock the characters and you scroll off the screen and you get the hidden characters. There's hidden characters in this as well. And where you've got, you know, your main cast, they're all animated to a certain extent. They're either polygonal or, you know, they've got their profiles. The secret characters have actually got photos. I've got a feeling that they may be the actual devs. I'm not sure how famous they are, but I think that's fantastic. And yeah, it plays really, really well. It's got a load of personality. The characters are fantastic. A lot more rough and rugged maybe than Virtua Fighter, because there's a lot of like kind of, I wouldn't say quite UFC or MMA style, but there's a lot of mounting and stuff. But there's also a lot of bonkers stuff, like there's girls that will jump on your shoulders and stuff. It's pretty bonkers, but it retains that whole punch kick guard setup of the Virtua Fighter series, and it really is just a fantastic fighter. So yeah, that's my first choice for a game in Japan that our listeners might be interested in.
Mm-hmm. Visuals wise, it definitely looks like a cross between like a Last Bronx and a Dead or Alive. You know, it's like some of the characters, there's one in there wears a kind of black costume with white trim, and she's got red hair and knee-high boots, very similar to like a Kasumi from Dead or Alive. There's a kind of blonde girl with a kind of boob tube and kind of wee hot pants on, with kind of, again, knee-high boots, very reminiscent of like kind of Tina from Dead or Alive as well. So, it's definitely got kind of vibes from, you know, you can see the kind of AM2 influence, the kind of titles on there. Obviously, it is very, very kind of Last Bronx / Dead or Alive. That's one I've got on Fenrir as well. And what a title, Anarchy in the Nippon.
Oh, it's brilliant. It reminds me of kind of Rumble in the Bronx. Anarchy in the Nippon, it's fantastic. I think it must have been developed around the same time that the Last Bronx port was coming, because Last Bronx was also 1997. So very similar setup, you know, Last Bronx set in Japan, with gangs feuding, Aniki and Nippon, also set in Japan. I think also set in Tokyo, like Last Bronx is, but not a near future version. Just I think a present day version, just with a bunch of lunatics that just want to beat seven loads of crap out of each other. I mean, what's not to love about that?
Ah, exactly.
Exactly, mate. So that's my first pick. What is your second pick?
So my second pick, if I can just get this to stop freezing on me, my lovely laptop is deciding to lag behind here. Give me 2 seconds till I get my list up. Yeah, so my second game is Cotton 2 Magical Night Dreams. Again, another one that's got an English mod on there to help with the kind of, obviously the kind of story aspect and allow you to kind of understand it a wee bit kind of better. This was released on the 4th of December 1997 by Tecmo. So Cotton 2 is a scrolling shooter, it's a side-on shooter, similar to the original game Cotton Fantastic Night Dreams, where players assume the role of a young witch Cotton or her rival Appeal, and who alongside their companions travel across 7 increasingly difficult stages through the magical dreamlike world on a quest to defeat several monsters and retrieve the missing Blue Water Willow candy to the Pumpkin Kingdom. So that's your synopsis of the game. And again, it's, you know, a very stylized classic kind of, you know, Saturn 2D kind of fare. Really, really good, really kind of cute looking wee game, you know. Just again, a beautiful kind of 2D side on, tough as nails though, a real challenge. Don't let the kind of cutesy aspect of the characters fool you, it is tough. And again, that English patch on there is great, and it allows you to kind of understand what's going a bit better there. Another one that kind of goes for, last we checked, about kind of 200 to 300 mark, if you're looking for a physical copy on there. But again, if you've got that ODE, you do have access to that English patch version to allow you to experience it in a more kind of regionalised manner. But yeah, Cotton 2 Magical Night Dreams is my second choice.
It's just such a magical game on so many levels. It looks. I mean, some of the backgrounds in it are gorgeous. I absolutely adore the art style of it, and it plays really well as well. I mean, it's not the most conventional shoot 'em up or shmup. Dominic Diamond's going to kill me now, but. But it's fantastic to play. And I really need to play a bit more of it, because I got it on the Fenrir and played it a little bit when I saw it on your list. But I haven't given it as much time as some of the others that we're going to be discussing today. So fantastic choice, mate.
It's really, really good looking. Again, just testament to the 2D power of the Saturn. But as I said, don't let the kind of cutesy nature of the characters and the setting fool you. It is a real challenge. Really kind of good gameplay mechanics as well. Kind of switching between your kind of, obviously your characters as well, different kind of weapon types and whatnot on there as well. So I definitely want to check out, highly recommended.
Brilliant, mate. Absolutely fantastic.
So what's your second choice then, mate?
So, if it's not obvious already, the Saturn is very blessed with its shmups. Oh, he did it again. There's plenty on this list that we could be talking about. But yeah, James, as we said, we're not going to concentrate on the well-known stuff. So we're going to leave off the Batsuguns, the Donpachis, the Doodonpachis, the Hyper Jewels, and, you know, all of those ones. Radiant Silver Gun, I did have on my list, but that one we do feel is a bit more well-known, even though it was on Games with Gold sometime in the last few months, and all the people, you know, when the Games with Gold announcement on Xbox went out, everyone said, "What are these games? They're all absolute crap." And I was thinking, "What Radiant Silver Gun's in there? Do you knuckle dragging Neanderthals not know what Radiant Silver Gun is? I mean, you're getting a Sega Saturn classic, a game that goes for £200 plus for free on your Xbox, you imbeciles." But anyway, I digress.
I know it's the usual you get whenever the Games with Gold stuff comes out, and obviously they're don't know, I kind of have ended it now. It's just no longer going because it was, you know, every month they would come out, what's all this? These are a lot of shit. I need to do a why we fix it. It's crap. And then you see Radiant Silver gun on there and you're going, what? It's like, yeah, you ungrateful sods.
You don't even know you're born, son.
I played Radiant Silver Gun when I was but a man.
And it was nothing to me but blinding.
what's your second choice then, mate?
So the shmup I am going for is Sonic Wings Special. This was one released in 1996, not as well known as the others, as we've said, but a fantastic game in its own right. Actually comes in a great little package with a mini soundtrack CD as well. So it costs a little bit. Costs about three figures if you're trying to get hold of one. I was lucky enough to get one as quote junk. It's basically it's almost like a compilation. Almost a Sonic Mania, so to speak. So basically it's a best of Sonic Wings 1, 2 and 3. Shares a bunch of levels with those, bunch of features. You've basically got several characters and they've got fighter jets. So you choose your character, you choose your country, then you choose your character, then you choose your fighter jet, and there's all sorts of combinations you can do. The game has several, I think it's in the teens, the number of levels it has. I haven't seen them all, but you have about, you know, 15 levels to go through, but you only actually play through 9 on any one time. So sometimes your multiple routes are based on the characters that you selected, or the country you selected, or the plane that you're playing as. Sometimes you get the option to choose your route, and then it will just basically take you through, and there's multiple endings, multiple bosses. Obviously, there's a two-player mode as well, and it really is a fantastic little shoot 'em up. Now, it is out on PlayStation as well, but the PlayStation version came out first. Interestingly, it was made for PlayStation arcade hardware, but it came to the Saturn, and they added this 480i interlace mode. So if you've got the right TV, if you've got one that supports 480i, this game looks absolutely gorgeous on it, by some accounts, it actually plays a lot smoother than even the arcade original does. So a well worthy, especially if you're a shoot 'em up fan, an absolutely worthy addition to your Japanese Saturn library.
And I'm just looking at some of the pilot names as well. Blaster Keaton.
Oh God, they're fantastic.
Oh, who also is / Mecha Keaton. Now, the fact it's got Blaster Keaton, you know, just think about Michael Keaton. It's like, I'm Batman. You get Captain Silver. I did laugh at some of the teams. One of the teams is called NATO as well. So yeah. It's like, you know.
You got Kofal the Viking from Sweden as well.
That's right, Kofal the Viking. You've got a Russian team with Volk and Chaka and Pushika. The Japanese pilots are Heen and Mau Mau. Yeah. So I just, honestly, man, just, but that cracked me up. Mecha Keaton. I just thought. Is that not the version of, what was Michael Keaton's character with the, what was it he was in a game? It was by the Spider-Man films, wasn't it? They had the big wings.
Oh, he's a vulture, wasn't he?
That's right. That's Mecha Keaton.
I thought we were going to say Batman of the future.
Oh, well, I.
There's a secret character apparently as well that I haven't played as, but the secret character, there's secret characters and secret fighters, but one of the actual pilots is just called The Man.
With Becky Lynch.
Now that
I'm over here to play your game.
Now that would be something in 1997, wouldn't it?
By God, it's The Man. Oh, shamefully, one I've not actually played, mate, but I think this wee exchange has definitely whet the appetite to go in and obtain it and have a go of it.
Yeah, definitely pick it up, mate, and stick it on your Fenrir, because unlike a lot of shoot-em-ups, it's actually not like brain-meltingly difficult. I've finished it a couple of times, and to be honest, I'm pretty poor at shoot 'em ups at the best of times. Even Radiant Silvergun, I think we touched on it on in the Saturn Mini episode, that I've beaten Radiant Silvergun, but I need a lot of help on it. So this one, it's very approachable. It's not as rampant as, say, something like Donpachi or Batugan. It's a little bit more laid back, even compared to Cotton. Cotton's, you know, pretty brutal at times, and this is a little bit more laid back. So yeah, if it sounds like something that might be up your alley, give it a shot.
Absolutely, I'm definitely going to try that one later on, mate.
Perfect, mate. And as for ones to try, what's your next choice for our listeners?
So my third is a game from Taito, released on the 14th of February 1997. And this is an absolutely brilliant game. So much fun with this. It's Elevator Action Returns.
Yeah, brilliant game. And Taito are superb. I've got a couple of mentions in here. So yeah, this one, mate, go ahead and explain to our listeners why they need it.
Yeah, so basically the objective of the game is to enter all the red coloured doors in each stage and then proceed to the exit. If a player misses a door, they will not be allowed to go any further in the mission after a certain point. So basically you start off, the game drops you off in a chopper on the roof of a building, and then what you've got is you're basically seeing the whole building basically stripped, the front stripped away, so you're getting a full view of the inside of the building. Lifts at either side go up and down at different points on different floors. Undercover objects that you can find in bins and garbage piles, crates. There's blue coloured doors that will give you a kind of random item through a roulette system. It can be more ammo, a special weapon. The enemies are quite varied. You get normal kind of henchman style. You get attack dogs. You get guys in big trench coats that look oddly like the guys from Narc. You know, remember the wee guys in Narc?
Yeah,
you're busted. Very reminiscent to that. They've got all different kind of levels of firepower as well. A very simple game, just your normal kind of 8-button directional D-pad or joystick, and basically you've got a jump and a fire button. That's it. There's no complex controls, but if you don't go in each of the red doors and investigate them, as the kind of timer runs out, if you haven't done enough of the red doors or you haven't reached the right kind of area to go to the exit, like this big kind of fire alarm style goes off, you know, wow, wow, and the screen starts to flash and everything just goes total chaos, and then it becomes a bit of a mad panic to obviously get to the exit door. So it kind of adds, it's like a shoot 'em up, a bit of puzzle based in there. It's a really, really clever game. And again, just Taito doing great work. Again, one of my other favourite games from Taito is Volfide, which I had on the Amiga. It's also on the Mega Drive. I loved that game as well. Again, Taito seem to be quite kind of good at that, merging kind of like one genre but adding a kind of puzzle element to it. So again, this is one that goes for between $250 and $300 if you're looking for a physical copy of it. No need to worry about any kind of regionalized kind of in English patches or anything like that. It's all in English and perfectly understandable, and the gameplay speaks for itself. But really, really good in that you've got to kind of, you know, balance, you know, going in the right doors to investigate, going in the kind of blue doors to kind of use the roulette system to get more ammo to take on the harder enemies. And whenever that alarm goes off, and you can't control some of the lifts are on like their own kind of schedule. So there's times where the lift's at the top of the building and this alarm's going off and you're two floors away for the exit and you're sitting there panicking, you're under fire, you've got attack dogs trying to get you. It's just, it becomes total chaos. It's a lot of fun. A really, really good game, really underrated, I feel, and definitely one that I think if you've got the money to pick it up, definitely do so. But if not, you owe it to yourself to give it a shot because it is great fun.
It really is, mate. Another one that I didn't actually play until I got the Fenrir installed in my Saturn not too long ago. And yeah, it was one of the first ones that I jumped on, funnily enough, because as far as I'm aware, it's in, you know, when you if you followed it, it's kind of legendary. And I was not disappointed. The gameplay loop is, you know, it's simple, but it's just so I mean, I say it's simple, you know, the controls are simple, but there's an awful lot to think about, a lot of decision making when it comes to how you're going to approach things. It is kind of a puzzle game in many respects, but the action in it is just so satisfying. There's just something about the way that that the firing feels, the collision detection, the way that enemies fall down. It kind of feels tense without feeling too intense, because enemies, they kind of endlessly respawn, don't they?
Yeah.
So you've got to keep moving. You can't just stay in one place. You can't gun everyone down and think that now you've cleared the level out. They keep coming. So yeah, there's a lot of decision making, as you say, mate. When that timer ticks down, anything goes, really. I had an incident where I was rushing towards the exit, got out of the lift, killed an enemy on one side, went the other way, and the lift that I thought was coming up, because it had only got up one level, came straight back down and squished me. So it's unpredictable in that way when you get to that point, and I think that adds that ramps up the tension, which really just makes it just a fantastic experience, really. And it's just a classic arcade style game.
Yeah, that's great fun. Highly recommended.
Good stuff there, mate. So my third choice. We've had one bonkers fighter when we're talking about Anakin and Nippon, but I'm going 2D this time, and I'm going with World Heroes Perfect. Now, this is a 1996 port of a 1995 SNK fighter. It actually came over before, you know, the RAM cart was actually a thing. So it's before King of Fighters 95, or it may have been around the same time, but whereas King of Fighters for 95 had the ROM cart, this didn't have anything at all, which it didn't really need, because unlike the King of Fighters games, it's one-on-one. And if you're looking at it, you may think, do you know what? This looks like a great fighting game. What's bonkers about it? Dear listeners, let me tell you a story. A story about a scientist, a scientist with one desire, a scientist who wants to know who the greatest fighter is. Not the greatest fighter in the world, but the greatest fighter of all time. So this scientist creates a time machine to see who the greatest fighter is in history. So you've got pastiches of Joan of Arc, Genghis Khan, Rasputin, Bruce Lee, and they've all been sucked into this time machine from this mad scientist to do battle to see who the strongest of all time is. I mean, it's absolutely mad. And that, obviously now the
was somebody drunk the whenever intro. They came up with us.
it's just insane. Because when I first played it, I was going through the roster and I was thinking, a lot of these, like, he looks a bit like Bruce Lee. There must be some sort of influence here. Why is she dressed like that? So then I went, and obviously the game's in Japanese, but so when I went to look at what the story is about, I was just like, wow, this is off the wall, insane. It's actually, World Heroes Perfect is actually the fourth entry in what's a fairly long-running series. So, the first three weren't that very well received critically, but this one was better received and has a much stronger reputation, and it thoroughly deserves it. At face value, it plays very much like a Street Fighter Alpha game, or maybe more of a sort of a Darkstalkers game, because a lot of the special moves are kind of really overemphasized, not more flashy, a lot bigger, which you probably do expect from a more off-the-wall SNK game. It plays fantastically. It looks really good. The loading times aren't bad at all, considering it doesn't use a RAM card. So, yeah, I know the Sega Saturn isn't short of 2D fighters. You've got your Street Fighter Alphas, your King of Fighters, your Marvel games. There's just no dearth of them. But if you want something different, if you want to play a game that is slightly different to the rest, if you want to go and punch Rasputin in the face with a Bruce Lee lookalike, what better game is there than this? The mechanics are great as well. I mean, it's got these counters that are really hard to pull off. But when you pull them off, they're really, really satisfying. It's a shame that it's kind of faded into obscurity a little bit, which is what kind of why it's on this list. I'd love to see, you know, if World Heroes Perfect is like Evo, with someone doing one of these counters and turning the tide of a match. But yeah, the possibilities are endless with this one. It really is worth a pickup.
Superb, mate, superb. So I think that brings us to the midway point in the show, and as has become a tradition here on the Sega Guys, we are going to play a piece of music, a little interlude that we do hope the listeners are enjoying. And for this week's piece of music, we have chosen the fantastic Braun from Bulk Slash, one of the Sega Saturn Japanese exclusives that has had an English fan mod translation. So we hope you guys enjoy it.
That was music from Bulk Slash, which we were talking about earlier on in the episode. The track name is Braun, just like the power, the toothbrush. Recharge your smile.
Recharge your smile with Bulk Slash on the Sega Saturn.
Oh, but what a tune, though. Brilliant tune. I do hope that the listeners are enjoying these little musical interludes. I know that we are.
It's good to kind of think about what we're going to put in each kind of episode. I mean, obviously I try and get Conditioned Reflex to play every single interlude, which I don't think people get quite bored yet or something, but it's good to kind of tie in and maybe play some of the kind of rarer music again, because these are coming for these kind of Japanese games as well that maybe not a lot of people have played. So yeah, just we thought it would be something that would be good to break up the, obviously I'm not going to say break up the monotony, because that would be saying that we're monotonous, which I don't think we are. We're very,
yeah, I hope not.
very jovial, and we're not all monotone sitting talking like this. So, aye, we've put these in to kind of add a wee bit of extra content. Just kind of obviously Radio Sega show. So, a bit of music interlude in there to break up the proceedings, and allow us to get a refreshment before we go again. But no, great game, great music.
And speaking of getting back to business, mate, what is your fourth choice this evening for Big in Japan? What should our listeners be seeking out?
Here we go. Right. I have been rehearsing this. This is where I better not make an ass of it. So this is the Time Warner Interactive title from the 17th of January, 1997. This is a game which sealed at present on eBay is going for £2,600. If you want to unsealed, you are looking at anywhere from between £650 to £1,050, depending on condition and inclusion of a spine card. The game is called Shinrai Jusatsushi Taromaru. It is a 2.5D side-scrolling action game, as we said, developed by the Japanese division of Time Warner Interactive. The game was actually released, as I said, in Japan in 1997, and it was literally weeks before Time Warner Interactive's closure, which resulted in a very low run of the game. So there's claims that there was only 7,500 copies made. That figure has been disputed, with Sega Saturn magazine in Japan claiming 50,000 copies. However, Edge have also said that the number is closer to 5,000, which is why it commands absolutely insane prices. The game itself, gameplay-wise, as I said, it's a 2D side-scrolling action game where you take on the role of psychic ninjas. There's two characters to pick from. Again, the very stylized, very kind of, you know, feudal Japan style setting, really kind of, you go from enemies which are very kind of basic, like ninjas with swords. You don't actually fire swords, you fire like, I don't know, like kind of orbs, like kind of light, kind of, obviously you're a kind of psychic ninja, you fire these kind of little lasers off kind of thing, for lack of a better term. There's a kind of symbol lock on target that floats in front of your character. You use that, and you've actually got to try and position your character so that that is on the enemies, and that's where you'll fire to. It's got sort of Shadow Dancer style elements whenever you come across platforms or roofs or balconies that you can jump up and move up at a higher level, go past obstacles, jump back down. As I say, you fight kind of normal kind of ninjas with swords, flames, but the bosses in this game are frequent and ever more increasingly wacky. The closest thing, when I spoke to you, Dan, I said it's like something out of like Clash of the Titans from the old days. The game literally throws you straight into a boss fight. Whenever you start, you've got these two kind of giant skeletons that spit fire at you, and you've got to take them out one at a time, dodge their projectiles and things like that. As you go through the first village, you jump onto a boat, and you fight what looks like a kind of strong man. He's got like a big wooden kind of plank, and he tries to charge at you. As you shoot him, his limbs fall off, and he still tries to attack you without any arms. But he then mutates into this gigantic red demon style, kind of very, again, feudal Japan, Japanese style, where he takes his ribs and bits of his body and kind of turns them into weapons and tries to stab you with them. And it's just crazy. But at the same time, it's a really enjoyable, challenging game. You can get very easily overawed by the amount of kind of projectiles and enemies on screen at once. I say the boss battles are really challenging, but really enjoyable as well. Now, would I say that the game is worth the price to get it physically? Absolutely not. No game is worth that. I would say, you know, if you paid 60, 70 quid for it to import it back in the day, that's probably its true value. But much like the retro scene is just now, the prices aren't based on the quality of the software, they're based on the rarity and the reputation the game has amassed in the decades that followed. And because of that low run, and the collectors obviously pushing the prices up as the guys are dealing in it, that's why it goes for stupid money. But if you've got an ODE or a means to emulate Saturn, then give it a go. It's got quite a lot of kind of Japanese text in it in terms of story-wise, so it's not easy to follow what the hell's going on. Hopefully, if the fan community do an English mod for this one as well, but definitely worth trying out, but I certainly wouldn't be looking to obtain a physical copy.
No, absolutely not. It goes for ridiculous money, as you say, mate, but it really is. Do you know, my thoughts in it is it's the best Treasure game not made by Treasure. It's got a real... it's absolutely stunning looking. The way that 2D and the backgrounds and the use of the, you know, the VDP2 and the tricks that are pulled off in there, it looks absolutely gorgeous. And it reminds me a lot of Radiant Silvergun. In some ways, it reminds me gameplay-wise a little bit, not massively, but a little bit of Gunstar Heroes. Just the way that the psychic attack, it's not quite a run and gun, but there's something to that, to me, that feels like that. But yeah, I haven't got as far as you, mate. I think I've only seen one or two bosses when I played it most recently. But I think just as a visual showcase for the system, it really is one that you just have to behold. But it's almost a bonus that it plays as well as it does. As you say, no game is worth the amount that one commands. You know, Panzer Dragoon Saga, as much as I love that game, is not worth £400. No game is worth that. But if you can get your hands on it via an ISO that you to play on your Fenrir or your ODE or via your emulation, you've got to play it just to experience it. It's just a shame that it had the lifespan that it did through Time Warner's demise or pulling out of the market at the time, because it really was something special. It's kind of like a bulk slash in a way. It's a real advert for what the Saturn really could do in the right hands. Just again, with a low print run, never making it to the West. It's just another gem that sadly a lot of people missed out on. But modern technology, ODEs, etc., allow you to do that. So yeah, definitely one for people to get on.
And it was interesting as well, mate, you mentioned it's a Treasure game that's not by Treasure, because Hiroshi Uchi, actually, who worked for Treasure, did work on the game. He did some of the art design for it. So there is a bit of kind of Treasure's influence in there. So obviously the fact that you mentioned that, just dropped that in there. But yeah, it's a really, really nice game. The 2.5D aspect of it, when you walk through the kind of towns and you get to like a dead end and you actually turn the corner, the whole stage rotates on its axis. It's really, really nice. So definitely want to check out if you have the means to do so.
Yeah, definitely, mate. I completely forgot. I think someone told me in the past that there was some Treasure involvement, which might have been why it was in my head. But even just looking at it, you definitely get that feel for it. No, fantastic choice, mate.
Thanking you. So how about yourself, mate? What's your first one of the second half of the show?
So I am going with a racer, and this is an arcade racer. I'm going with Wangan Dead Heat. Some people may know this one, some people may not. I think most people should, if they've had some experience with it, will know it, but maybe more by reputation than anything else. It's another, and you're laughing already. Oh, I've chosen the crazy 3D fighter, the crazy 2D fighter. What could be crazy about this driving game? Well,
tell us, Dan, what's crazy about this driving game?
Let's have a look. So it's a 1995 arcade style racer. It's made by Genki, so people might know them from the Tokyo Extreme Racer or Highway Battle series, Virtua Fighter 3 port on the Sega Dreamcast. It reminds me a lot, gameplay wise and looks wise, of Ridge Racer. The way that the collision detection works, the way that the visuals are very high contrast, very bright, kind of like Ridge Racer is. And some of the track design, you have the second half of the Ridge Racer course as areas that look like that because it's street racing. Even the focus on drifting is kind of like that. The way that cars start out way ahead of you and quite similar to Sega Rally, you kind of pass them as you go through, all that sort of thing. So yeah, it looks great. Handling takes a little bit of getting used to. Again, it's kind of how I feel Ridge Racer is, but it gets very addictive once you get the knack for it. Drifting's a massive part of it. It kind of feels like, you know, the way that you swing the back end out in Outrun 2, not quite as good, in fact, nowhere near as good, but still very satisfying when you pull it off. So, yeah, what could be odd with that? It's got a two-player mode, it's got a time attack mode, and it's got a campaign. And the campaign is where it gets interesting. You are a street racer, obviously, and you want to win races, and you want to win these races to woo one of 10 women. You want them to get into your car and drive around the track with you. Now, obviously,
out of my dreams.
Get into my car. Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, it's kind of not. It's a little bit creepy. I mean, the actual racing is why you come here to play this game, but tacking all this on the end, I don't know. Obviously, this is very, very Japanese. It's not the sort of thing that you'd probably see in the West, unless it was, you know, BMX XXX that was made by Activision back in the day. I mean, it's a little bit odd selecting a girl to come in your car and try to impress her. Now, they all have certain criteria that you have to fulfill. And I only found this out by looking at the FAQ because I was winning races. So basically, you select the girl.
You were winning races, but only getting a date.
Yeah, you. When you start off, they lean over, and they look into your window, and you do your first race, and you know, you might finish first, and then the next cutscene is them, you know, smiling, and then they get in the passenger seat, and then you go in the race again. As long as you fulfill their criteria, they'll you know, they're still sitting next to you in their swimwear while they're walking around on these streets in bikinis. Who knows?
Mate, but, we need to get Jim Cornette to look at that. If anybody listening to the show doesn't listen to Jim Cornette's podcast, man, he was talking about the 15 most popular Japanese dating sim games, and he's, you're trying to tell me there's 15 the best of these things? That means that there's more than 15 of these fucking things. And this is just right up that, you know.
It is. But yeah, the thing I had to look at, so I won a race, and the girl's still getting out of the car with the hump. I'm like, well, what am I doing? I'm coming first, but you've got to do things like drift a certain amount of times, or you've got to go through the entire track without hitting another car or hitting the wall, and that's when it does get a little bit frustrating. But the actual gameplay of it all, the time attack mode, and if you can get someone to play with you, it's actually a really, really fun racer. I think it actually looks pretty fantastic for a 1995 arcade racer on the Saturn. As I said, it's not quite up there with Ridge Racer, but visually there's definitely a lot of influence there. It runs at a rock solid 30 frames per second, and this is, I believe, if you're looking at timelines, this is before Sega Rally here. It's definitely not using the SGL, so it's a well-made game. So yeah, definitely a racer that people should definitely try. You can take or leave the dating aspect of it. It's entirely up to you. Who am I to judge?
Whatever floats your boat. Oh man, honestly. But I mean, that was well presented, mate. I have to say, you sold that well. you sold the gameplay part, and then you added in the wacky aspect, because anybody who's no heard of this would be going, this is just standard fare, man. A racing game's a racing game.
A racing game / dating sim. I mean, I know I've had some odd ones on here so far, but I think the wildest one is yet to come.
Jesus. Right, yep.
that's why we're here, though, mate, isn't it? Because you just would not get these games in the West.
No.
World Heroes, maybe. But Aniki and the Nippon, definitely not. This one, definitely not either. It's if it came, it'd probably strip out all the FMV fun, which may detract from the experience if you're into that sort of thing. I don't think it would work with Western women if they added Western women into it. It just becomes, I don't know, maybe a little bit even more creepy.
Even more creepy. I just imagine that trying to get past the sensors or something. You're like, you want to do what?
Yes.
Get the hell out of my office.
The clips as well are so awkward. I mean, you can tell that they're really cheap, like, kind of photo shoots. They've dolled these girls up in bikinis, and they're meant to kind of be looking like they do a little twirl when you select them.
Oh,
and when
God.
They're leaning over talking to you into the car. It's yeah, and just thinking of, I don't know, any sort of Western girl that would be willing to do that for the cost of a 1995 video game. It's I can only imagine what it would be like then. It'd be pretty cringe, but I don't know. As I said, mate, who am I to judge? You're into whatever you're into.
Whatever floats your boat, man. You know what I mean?
But behind it all, there's a great racing game in there, right?
And that's the most important thing. Well, my fifth choice is going to be completely dull as dishwater after coming off the back of that one. Because I have gone for Cyberbot's Full Metal Madness, released on, my dates here, I've got December 25th, so it was 1997, so Christmas Day apparently this one came out. Of course, it is very similar to Capcom's 1994 mech brawler called Armored Warriors, albeit it's a one-on-one mech. Armored Warriors allowed 3 mechs on screen at once. The Saturn port does support the 4 megabyte RAM cartridge, although it doesn't require it to run, so if you don't have it, you still can enjoy the game. But if you go into the menu, you can actually enable, and this is a weird thing, you can enable a 3 megabyte mode. So it does use the 4 meg RAM cartridge, but not all of it. It only uses 3 megabytes of it. But it does obviously enhance the animations and load times to kind of get that kind of more buttery smooth arcade look. But it's not too shabby running on a stock Saturn, so it is still more than enjoyable. And basically, the plot of Cyberbots is pretty much standard kind of sci-fi fare. Near the end of the 21st century, Earth begins to become over. In fact, Optimus Prime time, near the end of the 21st century,
there was the cube.
We know not where it comes from, only that it holds the power to have it away
and fill them with life.
Oh, man. Oh, but near the end of the 21st century, Earth begins to become overpopulated, leading to many people living in man-made space colonies. The primary army of Earth, the Earth Force, has been conducting experiments, and their work, along with the actions of the playable characters in the game, will determine the future of Earth. The ending to the game you see depends on the mech pilot you choose. So completely irrelevant plot. The basics of the kind of game is you pick a mech based on how much you like it, what colour it is, the design of it, and you proceed to just battle lumps out of the other mechs on gloriously colourful animated backgrounds. Absolutely gorgeous game. Doesn't go for too much. It's a very, very kind of common game. You can pick up the special edition big box case for it for about £50 on eBay. The standard version's not much cheaper than that, so it is very easily obtainable. All the menus are all in English. There's nothing kind of in there to make it restrictive. Just good fun, just classic kind of Capcom fare. But I think it's one that gets quite heavily overlooked because everyone goes to X-Men versus Street Fighter, Marvel Super Heroes versus Street Fighter, Street Fighter Zero 3. Everyone kind of goes towards them. The SNK games also use the kind of expanded RAM and ROM cartridges as well. And Cyberbots, I think, doesn't get enough of a mention. So that's why I put it on here, because it's one that I'll throw on from time to time and have a bit of fun with. As I say, runs great if you don't have a 4 megabyte RAM card, but you really can see the step up and the smoothness of the animations and obviously the loading times as well with that 3 megabyte mode. So, aye. I know it's a game you've got as well, mate. You're a fan of it as well.
Yep. Yeah, it definitely uses the RAM card much better than the other. There's Marvel Super Heroes, actually, is the other Capcom game that I'm thinking of that can use the 4 megabyte RAM card but doesn't require it.
Yeah.
And you can definitely see the improvement in the animations, but the Marvel Super Heroes actually comes with the caveat that a lot of the time, especially with the bigger characters, the extra frames of animation slow the Saturn down, whereas with Cyberbots it works almost flawlessly and it really does enhance the experience. But you're right, mate, it plays absolutely fine without the 4 megabyte RAM card, so it's very unfairly overlooked. I know it got released recently on the Capcom Fighting Collection,
yes,
which is, I think, underlines just how much it's overlooked, because Capcom Fighting Collection came out, it's like, oh, Hyper Street Fighter, Darkstalkers, 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 Darkstalkers. Oh, I can't wait to play Red Earth. And Cyberbots is sitting there in the background, like, well, what about me? But
are you not entertained?
Yeah, I know. So it's like giant mechs smashing the crap out of each other. What more do you want? It's got really, I really like the way that it just plays. It plays quite differently to other Capcom fighters, and the fact that you can choose your pilot. And then it's similar to Sonic Wings, really. You choose your pilot and they dictate your ending, but you can choose different variations of the mech. So you can get a character that plays the same. You can have an on-screen avatar that plays the same, but the character will be different, and then you'll get your different endings and stuff. So very clever the way it's set up. Very unique in the way it's not a six-button fighter from Capcom. You know, it plays a lot different to that. So, oh, yeah, I can't sing this one's praises enough, mate. And thankfully, if anyone is interested in it, it is fairly reasonable. We're looking about 30 quid or so for the dual case, 50 quid for the special edition. But of course, you can always stick it on your ODE. But even if you're playing it, even if you don't get a chance to play, if you listen to this and you don't even own a Saturn, in which case, what the hell is wrong with you? But if that's the case and you've got a modern console, you can play this in the Capcom Fighting Collection for about the same price. Don't sleep on it. It's fantastic.
Absolutely, mate. So what is your penultimate choice then?
So my penultimate choice is an arcade port. In fact, it comes from a series called Arcade Gears. So Arcade Gears was a selection of games that were taken from, these were old arcade classics, mostly ported by ports of Taito games. And the one that I'm going with is Arcade Gears Puri Ruler. Now this is a scrolling bottom. You're laughing already. The thing is, mate, this one is going to be a little bit different to Wangan and World Heroes Perfect, because with those two, I can explain what the story is or what the game consists of, and it sounds ludicrous. This one, I don't think I can really do it justice, but I'm going to try. So this is an arcade port. It's got amazing 2D visuals, animation reflections, like cartoony graphics. They really look like something out of like an early, like a 30s cartoon. Something very Cuphead about them. The story of this is that essentially there's a place called Radish Land. And in this land, time keeps flowing because someone winds it up like a toy with a key. And one day, a bad man appears, and this is the official story. A bad man appeared and stole the key to time, which stopped the flow of time when the towns were attacked. And because the flow of time has stopped, Zack and Mel, the playable characters, they're requested by an old man to defend the town. The old man has given the children a magic stick to fight them with. So this is a Streets of Rage style, you know, Double Dragon style scroll and beat him up, but rather than punching things in the face with adults or, you know, smashing punks as you would do in Streets of Rage or Final Fight, you play as children with these magic stick. I got the magic stick. What's that, 50 cents? Yeah, they've got these magic sticks, and when they hit enemies, the enemies will turn into things like dogs, mice, and then you collect them, and they shrink into the character and disappear and give you points. It's very, very peculiar, and that's not the oddest thing. You make your way through these stages. You fight various bosses. There's a boss at the beginning that's kind of a puppet. You fight the puppet master behind him, and then the puppet runs off with this time key. And then you go through, you know, your town levels, and then things just start getting very, very odd. You get these weird toy-like enemies that throw their heads at you. And then when you get to stage three, that's when you get to everything's looking cartoony until you get to this point, and then you've got basically digitized photographic images of Japanese women, one hanging by a flag, being blown in the air. Another one with a giant face that's just kind of floating in the background. And as you start walking, it screams at you. And as you move forward, you move to this castle. And the cut out of the castle is two legs in bright pink stockings sticking out that will slam on top of you. There's a door that the legs are coming, and you can see that there's no there's nothing else but the stockings. But the fortunately the giant lady's modesty is covered up by the entrance to the castle. And as the door to the entrance of the castle opens, pink elephants float out and attack you. It is absolutely bonkers. When you die, you turn into an angel and float up just like Alex Kidd. It's definitely unique. It's loads of fun. Looks absolutely gorgeous, as I said. There really is nothing like it, and it's just one that you have to play it to see it to believe it. It's absolutely unreal. It does cost upwards of £300 to get the Arcade Gears release on Saturn. So another one to definitely get for your ODE or emulator, because you can beat it in about half an hour if you put it on like the easy setting, which I had to, because it does get quite challenging. It is a quarter muncher, so it very is much like Final Fight and its ilk, a game that is just gonna, you're gonna die a lot. And it can feel quite cheap at times, but it's well worth playing through at least once just to experience it, and then easing your way through the difficulty levels from there. No way is it worth, you know, £300. I'd struggle to say it's worth £50, but as an experience, as something that you really should play, 100% you need to try this one.
Mate, I have nothing to add. I just get nothing. You showed me screenshots, you took a picture of your TV, and it was that one with the legs with the stockings sticking out of these two archways with this wall with this door just planked right in the middle, and I was like, I mean, you're talking about doors opening and pink elephants flying out, man. It's like you've been watching Dumbo before we came on here.
I mean, what was it you said earlier? The people were drunk when they made World Heroes Perfect. I mean, I don't know what was going on when they...
Oh, man, somebody sitting in a room like that. Right, I've got an idea. Shove some legs out the holes in that wall and pink elephants fly out the door in the middle.
It's absolutely insane.
Ridiculous.
But do you know what? It was the game that I played through this week before we had this episode. I had other games on this list. As I said earlier, I had Radiant Silver Gun on here, which, you know, would not been as unpopular as some of the games on this, but I played this. I thought, no, I've wanted to play this for a long time, and playing it, it's lived up to everything that I dreamed it would. It's absolutely batty, but it also looks gorgeous. I mean, there's like reflection effects on there, and it looks amazing. The fact that it came out in 1991 and looks like this visually is really cool. And of course, the Saturn handles it flawlessly. So 100% one that I think everyone should play.
I'll be trying that on the Fenrir later. That's me get three for you to try out, mate. I'm getting educated myself here. My selections are quite boring by comparison, I think.
I don't think so, mate. I think you've had some absolute bangers on here. And if you want something new, unique, I think your last choice may well be a very different one.
Yes, nice segue into that there as well. So my final choice is a game from Nihon Create, released on 22nd November 1996. It is a charming 2D scrolling platformer, and it is Tri Rush Depi. This game, again, silly money. It's a very average game. You know, the prices being commanded again are very, very silly. About £600 for a sealed copy, and between £300 to £450 for an unsealed copy with spine card and various kind of memorabilia, kind of bump and leaflets and things in there. Very simple premise, very similar to like a Sonic the Hedgehog. You know, you get your first two levels, you run your way through them. The third of the stage, you fight a boss. Very, very simple, tried and trusted kind of formula. The general idea story-wise is it's a race across different parts of the United States. However, there are no actual races. So you get like a little intro map that comes up of a bit of the state. So the first one is Buffalo to New York. And you kind of, you know, there's very... kind of like stereotypical kind of landmarks that you see to suggest that you're in that area. Like if you get to New York, you get like a pizzeria, for example, it shows you that's in the background. But the vibe of it is very reminiscent to like Pixar's Cars movies. There's no Lightning McQueen going ka-chow, ka-chow. There's none of that. But you know, it's got that kind of look about the characters. It's a really, really gorgeous 2D, really nice kind of anime style interludes in terms of kind of telling a story and things like that, little kind of cut scenes, laying the kind of the foundations for why you're racing. Basically, as you go through the level, your wee car guy, obviously Tri-Rush Deppy, he's got his wee kind of gas meter. As you go through the stages, you've got to collect little kind of gas canisters that are hidden up on platforms. When you get that, you can dash. There's other cars. As again, there's no actual races, but you've got like enemy cars that are trying to stop you. There's other little kind of mechanical beings that kind of are on the platforms, very similar to Sonic. You jump and you land on them, you kill them. But it's just a nice, charming, 2D platformer. And again, just that kind of aspect that it's very kind of anime style, much like you were talking about with that last game. We were talking about how it was very kind of like Cuphead inspired in terms of looking like a kind of 30s cartoon. This does very much, it's quite ahead of its time in that regard, in that it does look kind of Pixar-ish, kind of Disney, kind of inspired. And it's just a really nice kind of laid back side-scrolling platformer with some kind of interesting kind of mechanics in terms of collecting gas to make sure you get to the end of the kind of stage. And again, it commands silly money now, but it's certainly not worth anything like that. So it's definitely one for the ODE owners and the emulators. But it's nice. I like it. It's a nice little game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it when I played it. It's definitely got that sort of Cars look about it with the anthropomorphic vehicle as your avatar. But it really reminded me of I cannot remember the name for the life of me of what the character's called now. But the taxi in Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes, aye, yep.
And when I first picked it up, I didn't actually know anything about this one until you added it to your list. So I booted it up. And straight away, I had no idea what I was thinking. Is this a driving game? Am I, is it a 2D? And then I finally got the hang of it. And it's actually a lot of fun. The platform elements are really cool. And the kind of inertia, the way that the character handles is quite unique because obviously it is a car. I did get stuck on one of the bosses. I found it really hard. You had to kind of jump on his... It was like a trash compactor or crushing thing, and it had a magnet pulled up. You had to dash against its face, and I was on it for about 10 minutes and then died, and that's as far as I got. But it's definitely really, really fun to play, and I've definitely recommend it along with you, mate.
Mm-hmm. So really, really good fun game. I really enjoy it. So that's us at the end of my six. So we are finishing off with your final choice, mate. What have you got for us this time?
My final choice is nowhere near as wacky as anything else that I've picked up so far. And in order for me to, add to that total lack of surprise, I've gone with another fighting game here. And I've gone with Real Bout Fatal Fury. Now, I know a lot of people are probably thinking, well, Fatal Fury is quite a popular franchise. How can this be one that's, not big in Japan, but not well known in the West? Well, Real Bout, for me, is overshadowed a lot. I think it's overshadowed by the King of Fighting games. I think it's overshadowed by the mainline Fatal Fury games. A lot of people will mainly focus on Fatal Fury 1, Fatal Fury Special. And it's definitely overshadowed by Garo Mark of the Wolves. That one, a lot of people compare to... They say it's the Fatal Fury version of Street Fighter 3. And I do love Garo Mark of the Wolves. But this one is different enough to Garo and other games in the series, but also polished and brilliant enough that it definitely deserves a lot of attention. Again, it's a 1995 arcade release that's come in 1996 to the Saturn. Because this one came a year after World Heroes Perfect and after King of Fighters 95, this one does actually use the 1 megabyte SNK RAM cart. It doesn't work too well with the 4 megabyte cart. It's one of the SNK games that where you'll get a little bit of sprite corruption if you use the 4 meg cart, but nothing too major. But it's an evolution of Fatal Fury 3, where you've got, rather than the two lanes for fighting, you've actually got three lanes, so you'll start off in the middle of the screen. It's a 2D fighter, but it kind of becomes quasi-3D because you can swap between lanes, almost like Guardian Heroes. And it's a Fatal Fury tradition. Obviously, the original Fatal Fury had two. This has three. It also introduces ringouts, which is really interesting. Kind of like a cross between Virtua Fighter and Fighting Vipers. So you'll come to the edge of the arena. Obviously, it's a 2D fighting game primarily, so you're either at the left-hand side or the right-hand side. If you attack the enemy against, you know, the wall there, then that wall will eventually break down. And if you're on the first stage, for example, that you'll kick your enemy off the stage into the drink, and they'll get an out of bounds! and you'll get the victory. Some don't have the walls, but it really does add another level of complexity and tactical. And, you know, fighting games a lot of the time are all about decision making. And this one, because you've got so many tools at your disposal, and it doesn't become overbearing, it's just that you've got a lot of options, a lot of things you have to be aware of. And I think for that reason, it works really, really well. It's almost narratively, I think, language barrier is obviously an issue. And I haven't gone back to look at the story of this one, because it's fairly by numbers, but it feels like a reimagining of the first Fatal Fury, because Geese Howard is the final boss in this one. He's an absolute bastard as well, but very satisfying to beat. So yeah, another great fighting game. This one does need that RAM card, so Mr. Segaholic, your tips at the very beginning are well needed on this one. But yeah, that is my final pick.
Good stuff, mate. Are the SNK games speak for themselves? I think that's a fair shout as well. That one does get overlooked. I think, you know, Mark of the Wolves, especially King of Fighters games, those ones do kind of steal the limelight. So yeah, no, great shout, mate. And obviously, you know, get that cartridge slot in tip-top condition, folks.
it's even overlooked in comparison to the follow-up. So there was Real Bout Fatal Fury Special. Fatal Fury Special adds a number of characters, Wolfgang Krauser, and that one is the one that everyone says, if you've got Fatal Fury in a set, and you've got to get Real Bout Fatal Fury Special. But I think this one is different enough, especially because the special, I think that goes back to the two lanes, very different makeup, different UI, different characters, and different gameplay elements. So this one stands on its own. Listeners, do not sleep on this one. If you like your fighting games, if you like King of Fighters, or Fatal, especially if you like Fatal Fury, make sure that you've added this one to the collection.
Absolutely. I think that's 12 very unique and worthwhile recommended games, mate.
Yeah, I think so, mate. A lovely Dirty Dozen from us there. Dirty Dozen, big in Japan games. So, yeah, I think we'll throw it over to our audience now. What do you think of our 12 games? Are there any other games that you'd like to add to this? Please let us know. Would you like any more episodes like this? We could do another dozen Japanese games. I think we've nearly over 1,000 games in the Sega Saturn Japanese library. I think we could probably find 12 more, so please let us know. You can catch me at swooper_D, you can catch James at the Segaholic, and you can catch us both at Sega Guys. But until next time, stay Sega, stay retro, see you on the Sega side. Goodbye.
Sega!